Welcome, friends, to another episode of the Events Demystify podcast, where we explore the cutting-edge technology, as well as the AI technology that's at the intersection of production and what's coming up next. I'm your host, Anka Platon-Trifan, and today we are basically continuing the topic that we have started in 2023 that has been sparking innovation, controversial conversations as well across many industries, and that is Gen AI. This past year has obviously been nothing short of a landmark in the evolution of mankind. Like, we didn't go to the moon quite that hard, but we definitely landed in some uncharted territory. We've witnessed an explosion of innovation when it comes to the rise of Gen AI tools such as ChatGPT, Bard, Claude, DALL-E, and also visual marvels like I mentioned DALL-E, Midjourney, Pika was another one, and technologies that have taken our likeness and turned it into AI avatars. And based on feedback received, probably we're not there yet. However, there's technologies out there that are constantly evolving, such as Runaway, HeyGen, and Synthesia. They have reshaped how we create, how we communicate, and how we experience content. The change has been quite rapid. And a lot of the people that I get to speak with are at the forefront of technology, but a lot of them are not yet sure that this is where they want to be, because there's obviously a lot of fear involved with change. And when it comes to staying in step with such a relentless march of progress, there's obviously a bit of a hardship that comes with that. However, as we navigate this new era, today's episode basically is going to dive straight into the heart of the technology advancement that we see it. We're here to demystify the complex, to celebrate the advancements, and to critically exemplify and bring up to our introspection some of the maybe implications of what these tools are and how are they reshaping the world as we know it. So fasten your seatbelts, grab your cup of tea, coffee, whatever it is that you consume these days, and let's delve into this awe-inspiring world of AI and its profound impact on our professional and creative lives.
Welcome to Events Demystified podcast, where we explore and demystify the world of in-person, virtual, hybrid event AV production and technology by sharing insightful tips, tricks, and tactics to make your events a success. This podcast is brought to you by TreeFan Events, a woman-owned boutique event production agency. And your host is Anka Trifan, a technical event planner and producer with almost two decades of hands-on technical experience in event production.
Okay, so last December, there was this 12-hour marathon put by Ichi Club community. It was more like a telethon, and we basically scratched the surface of AI in events and in planning, in management event planning, as well as marketing, but also in creativity with today's special guest. And let me tell you, it was very interesting conversation. Also, you know, a very light conversation because we didn't have the time to go more in depth. So what I wanted to do is bring my guest on the podcast so we can actually dive into what we were discussing during the telethon. So here we are, ready to dive deeper into the nature of AI in events and event productions. And for that, my guest joining today is Steve Mudd, the CEO and founder of Talentless AI, a new Austin-based creative agency that uses real and artificial intelligence to deliver provocative content with synthetic media. Steve is a man whose career is as diverse as it is fascinating. He's also currently the host of AI AF, a next-gen creative podcast that is featuring artificial conversations about real intelligence. Steve has a long history as an IT storyteller. He most recently ran strategic messaging and content marketing for NetApp and previously worked for Ogilvy on brands such as IBM, Lenovo, Level 3 Communications, and Iron Mountain. From producing the movie Seclusion to safeguarding mascots and guiding tours at the Adolf Course Brewing Company, Steve is a maven of experiences and insights. And today, he's here to share his expertise and experience in the Gen AI world, artificial conversations about real intelligence, how that's going. So without further ado, let's welcome Steve in. Steve, welcome to the show. It's great to see you again.
It's great to see you. Thank you for that warm introduction. And I'm just excited as heck to talk to you. I know you said we only had 15 minutes to chat before. And so now we're going to do 6 hours, right? We're going to have 6 hours.
Absolutely. But before we do that, let's make sure that it's the real you. Show your fingers. All 10 fingers. Awesome. Good. Fingers. We never know if it's Steve or some AI avatar version of Steve. So I want to make sure that that's true and real you that is coming to the conversation.
I think, in the early days of the pandemic, I was a pioneer in using video Zoom backgrounds where I took a video of myself and just put it in my Zoom background while I sat on the couch.
That is funny. That is funny. Well, last time we chatted, as you just alluded to, we only began to really unpack the potential of AI in creativity. And before we jump right back in, I want to, kind of peel back the onion layers a little bit over there, because for a moment, I was not sure I'm talking to the same Steve I talked to earlier in December. And I would love to hear more about who is Steve Mudd behind closed doors, and what's your journey? Like, where did you start and where you are now? Like, what's that trajectory been like for you?
As I look at the one consistent red thread through everything that you mentioned, I was a tour guide, when I was in college and had all these fun jobs kind of working with the public. I think the common thread for me is being a storyteller. And I honestly didn't realize it for a long time. So I consider myself a storyteller and a writer by trade, right? Like mm-hmm. writing and simplifying complicated topics into simple form is something that I've always kind of tried to do and have been good at. How do you take the complex and make it simple? And as an offshoot of that, I'm also that guy, I'm pretty good at connecting dots and figuring out this thing goes with this thing goes with this thing. And sometimes it's unusual and it comes out in the form of creativity, right? Like that's really in some ways what creativity is realizing that two disparate ideas go together in a funny way or a unique way or a provocative way. So, my journey has been, for the last, I don't know how to count years anymore, but we've been on the corporate side.
Just throw a number.
Years and years and years. But, I think that the most impactful parts of my career have been, working with Ogilvy, where we had the chance to work with IBM when they were rolling out Watson, helping to tell the story of big data and the story of AI, 10, 15 years ago. That was a wonderful experience. My last, role at NetApp, where I led this amazing team of creative people who were building content. And we just tried to keep pushing the boundaries, because at some level, I'm that guy who doesn't give a crap, let's try it. Let's experiment and let's have some fun. And so we've been able to do that. And that's what this last year, I left my job and started, this new company, and it's the same thing. Like, how can we have some fun? Like, I'm so excited about all of these AI things, all of the creative tools that I'm going to find a way. We're going to go and build a business off of this and find ways to be creative. And every day I'm torn between the business side of what I do, and I just want to go make some fun AI videos.
So. That's awesome. I mean, you know, it's kind of like that spirit of curiosity, of being, you know, having that childlike curiosity that kind of keeps you young, right? Like me and you, when we, you know, go back in our history and try to probably convey how many things we've done over the span of our careers. I know I get, you know, the long look of like, how old are you? And I'm like, I don't want to tell you. At this point, it doesn't matter. The other day at the gym, one of the girls that was working out there and I was, you know, doing my routine, she's like, I thought you're 25. I'm like, yeah, totally. Sure. Totally, yeah. 25. I'll take it. So it kind of goes like that. It's like when I try to explain some of the things I've done in the, you know, 1990s, I'm like, wow, I'm actually dating myself. Maybe I shouldn't put numbers to those events anymore, right? But yeah. Going to what you said, storytelling. My dad was a storyteller. And let me tell you, that takes skills. Like not everybody is a good storyteller. And I was actually raised with that being kind of part of my genetic makeup. And I love the stories that he would tell me. Like I fell in love with reading books because he would take like some Jules Verne, you know, adventure book and then synthesize it in some really fun highlights that would, you know, kind of use his own words to retell it, but then he would always add his own like adventure to that. So when I grew up and I went back to read those books and I read all of them, I couldn't find those moments that, you know, stood with me. And I'm like, where was that scene? Like, how did I miss it? And then later I realized actually that was never there. He made it up and made us believe that it was part of the original, you know, writing. So it was something that it was such a, like, kind of like a heritage embedded into me. And I love when I connect with storytellers like you, because it definitely takes some kind of a, you know, special person to be able to do that well. And then adding to it, the connecting of the dots, that's an extra level.
Yeah. I've taught, I teach a class on storytelling, I teach a class on storytelling or have in the past. And one of the things I talk about, you know, 15,000 years ago is when you start seeing these cave drawings in there. And there's evidence in some of those cave drawings now of a narrative arc of a structure of, hey, you know, this happened in my world. And that is now so ingrained in us that we can't not use stories to make sense of the world. I would put up a photograph, like pick any photograph, and you put up the photograph and say, what happened here? Mm-hmm. And your brain will automatically paint a story around what happened in that photograph. And it's fascinating, you know. I know we talked a little bit. So when I turned 29, a couple years ago, I had that moment of, I want to do something, right? I want to do something big. And so I decided when I was 29, and I had gotten married young, I had children young, and I wanted to do movies. I wanted to make movies. So when I was 29, I said, I'm going to make a movie by the time I'm 30. And that was like the first time in my life where I, from a career standpoint, where I focused all of my energies on one thing. And on creating something and on overcoming all of the obstacles of, you know, the fundraising and the casting and the writing and the creation of it. And so we ended up shooting my film, Seclusion, like the month after I turned 30.
That's crazy. And
so, you know, that's.
And there's a proof of it. Show us the proof. There's a proof.
This is now available on DVD at your local Blockbuster. Of course, the movie came out at literally the wrong. This is Seclusion. The last thing he wants is to be alone. It's the story of a politician who goes to a mountain cabin to have an affair. His mistress disappears mysteriously, and his wife shows up. So, we sold 4,000 copies. Blockbuster bought some, went out of business. Hollywood Video bought some, went out of business. Somebody like what was the other one? There were a couple other like big companies that like Virgin Megastore bought several copies and went out of business. So we were the thing that pushed those companies over the edge to go out of business. right as streaming came up.
They couldn't, you know, keep up with the demand.
No, it was too much. So now I'm like, I'm struck with, okay, I look at the process to create this, and I imagine, whoa, if I had GPT, you know, if I had some of these other tools that are coming out now, like I could probably do this movie in a fraction of the time for a fraction of the cost than I did. I spent $120,000 in $29, you know, and when
that's crazy,
whatever year that was to produce this. And now with some of the newer tools that are out there, who knows?
I'm curious if your wife divorced you in the process.
Yes, she did.
Actually. Oh my God, are you serious? Yeah. Oh my God. Okay, I was just like literally just making a joke, but that's a push. That's hard.
It was hard. And she was actually, Andrea Myers, she was, you know, my wife at the time, she co-produced it, did a wonderful job on it. But there were certainly pressures after that, which led to that. That's a whole other podcast. Gosh.
That's a completely different podcast. Yeah, we're going to have to scrape that. And moving forward with this amazing feat of putting on such a production, which, I mean, you came into it with, did you have prior filmmaking knowledge, or what was the one thing that, you know, brought this thought into your head to begin with? Like, you don't just wake up one day and be like, today I'm going to produce a movie, a film of all things.
My roommate in college and I we used to sit around talking about dropping out of school and making movies. And I started writing out of that. So I wrote a mm-hmm. script. I wrote a script and I submitted it to, some people might remember, I think there's a new version of Project Greenlight. Was a reality show that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck did on HBO, where the idea was, you know, they would find the next great filmmaker. So I submitted a script to that project and I made the top 250. Somehow my script was chosen from over 7,000 as one of the top 250. So that was the first moment where I'm like, oh, maybe this is something I could do.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So we got to move forward into the conversation, into the next stage, like taking that into today's times. And how do you see that, you know, creativity that pushed you to come up with this idea and the process and the money and the funds and all the production needs for, you know, putting on a feature film? How did that evolve over the years, and how do you see that potentially evolving in the future? You're talking about maybe coming with a sequel. Come on, give us all the deeds.
It's interesting to look at the different levels and the different areas of filmmaking. Mm-hmm. Obviously, now there are, if you look at the production side of what's going on in Hollywood, for years, we are used to CGI, right? Like computer-generated graphics that are in there.
Yeah, I love Avatar for that reason alone.
and so we're already accustomed to film as art that's not really been filmed. You know, it's fake. It is totally fake. It is artificial, whether it's, you know, from artificial intelligence or not. It is not like they filmed blue people flying in the sky. So there's been this sort of march towards this computer stuff. When you look at like in person, we've used it for events where we had like a huge LED screen in the background, and you can program LED screen to look like anywhere you want. Right? Like you could be like we did a wine show for one of our corporate events when we had an LED thing that made it look like it was a wine show.
Yeah.
Like they were in a wine cellar, and it looks real. Unreal Engine is a company or a technology that some people may be familiar with, but you know, they're using Unreal Engine to basically create whole new worlds that can be projected on these massive LED screens and backdrops. There's a studio here in Austin and Chicago, like all the cities are now kind of there's maybe one or two in each city where they have these huge studio spaces where you can, in essence, in one room, not with a green screen, with a background that looks as real as any green screen or anything filmed would look, you could film a movie in a room.
Yeah.
And so you could do it quickly. You don't have to move your camera 100 times. And, you know, they can replicate the movement of the sun, right? Like the lighting and everything. Like it's as real can be. And so it makes that storytelling from that aspect, you know, so much cheaper. So like, yeah. You don't have to go.
So it's kind of like more, not only is cheaper, but it's more approachable, like for people like, you know, potentially me and you that don't have those crazy budgets, right, to put on a feature movie, and yet it's becoming accessible. So do you see that as the future of filmmaking and video production as we move forward?
It's the present. You know, it's where it's going in a lot of ways. Like, you look at, I just watched The Family Plan on Netflix. I swear to God, I don't know that they actually went to a location. I feel like that whole movie was generated on a computer. So I learned filmmaking not through a fancy film school. There's this wonderful class. I think it's still taught. It's the Hollywood Film School. It's 2 days. The first day is how to make a movie. The second day is how to sell a movie. And in that first day, they teach you, you know, to keep it cheap, one location, right? Not a ton of actors. You know, keep it simple. Don't overcomplicate your story, because every time you have to move the cameras, it costs money. Every time you have to set something up new, it costs money. So the fewer times you have to set up, you can do that. Now, you could create a movie where you are in one location, but you're in 100 locations. So you can improve the complexity of that, which is really exciting to me. And I think that's probably most of the entertainment you're going to start seeing, at least on a mass produced basis. You know, the mainstream entertainment that we're seeing today is going to be all about that.
Absolutely. I think there is an article, actually. I follow a lot of the AI innovation that's happening. And there was an article on LinkedIn about recently, I think it was Sony, that came up with a brand new way to film a feature movie in basically one location, just with the latest AI technology. And you have all the scenes, like you said, everything is changing, but the camera is just static into like at one point, and they're literally projecting on the scene in front of the camera, which was like crazy, because now it's the whole, you know, foreground and background moving, but not the camera. Before, it's like always like moving cameras everywhere, and you have all this everything, right? All our, which takes a lot of manpower, a lot of budget to have those cameras in the first place, because that is not cheap, right? But now, like you could technically use your iPhone.
Yeah. I mean, the resolution. So my film, the raw footage of my movie is in the garage. It's sitting, it's a terabyte of data, which at the time is 4 pretty sizable hard drives.
Yeah.
I have a terabyte on my iPhone, right?
Yep.
Right. Like I could do it there. And the resolution's probably better here than what we filmed with. Now, and of course, you know, and we'll get to the writing, but you look at what happened with the Screen Actors Guild recently with the strike. And that's one of the issues now, is like, now that I have filmed Chris Stapleton and Missy Kreider, do I own their likeness forever?
Right.
Can I take what I have created and reuse it? You know, I there with some of the AI tools out there, with Resemble, with HeyGen, DID, some of these tools, I could create an avatar of the people that I've created. And I technically own all of this footage. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, right. And you can just keep like rendering and re-render different versions of this movie forever, basically.
Yeah. So what, you know, so the ethical complications of that, the financial complications of that. But, you know, Hollywood is pushing this in quietly. Like I just read that CAA, the agency for a lot of the artists out there, there's a CAA vault where they are actually creating digitized versions of their clients, and it's full on, you know, shoot a video, like do the motion capture. You know, they are capturing their clients digitally. so that they can sell their clients digitally, so that their clients can make money without doing anything. So there's one aspect of it where they're trying to figure out how to capitalize on it, but they're also whining about it, like, don't do it because you own the rights. So we'll see how that progresses. But I know we talked at Ichi about the basic technology now, where you and I can create avatars of you've created your own avatar. I have a couple avatars of myself.
Yeah.
And I have a blast creating content with that. Like it's kind of fun to do, but
aside from freaking some people off, yes.
Yeah, they're not ready for it, and HeyGen was the one. HeyGen was one tool that I think everybody who creates video content needs to take a look at. Mm-hmm. They just introduced this instant translation feature where you can upload any video you want. Doesn't matter what the video is. You just upload it, give them a YouTube link, upload the file. It instantly translates it in your voice.
Yeah.
So,
didn't 11 Labs do that where you could actually clone your voice with 11 Labs for a little while now? I remember playing a little bit with also Try Replay.io. Mm-hmm. Which basically it's like you can explore a world of AI voices and add your own, but then you can start, literally using your voice to speak in different languages, which is also super creepy.
because you obviously you have an accent,
right?
What's interesting is that the technologies are actually able to tweak your accent to match the language that you're speaking, so that
I think that's where my problem with HeyGen has been, because I don't think it's there yet, or maybe I haven't added enough credits to, perfect my accent, even though the AI avatar, looks in my likeness. When you listen to it, it doesn't sound like me. So that's where, I got, feedback from people that are close to me and be like, that doesn't look like, it doesn't sound like whatever, all the things, like, it freaked me out, please don't use it again. But it was the voice, right? So I think, especially people that speak with an accent, like, it probably takes quite a few renditions to get that replicated properly. And I don't think my avatar is there yet. That's why this is, version 1.0, and she's still growing. She's an infant.
Yeah. I started with Resemble was the first tool that I used. And initially, I had to go in and read 25 sentences. Right? It was like the dog ran over the park. They were difficult phrases, right? The language was difficult, but I had to read 25. And then when I did that synthesis, it didn't sound right. And so you could improve it. And eventually I read 200 sentences. I was sitting at this desk in the middle of the night in my microphone. The fat dog ran down the box.
Right? That I would have to do to replicate the Romanian language, one phrase that we actually had to learn to say in first grade was because you had to say to roll your R's, because Romanian is full of like R's, right? So like, if you didn't know how to say this, you couldn't pass into first grade. Like that was the test. So I feel like this is where the AI avatars need to improve.
I think it'll just be a matter of time before the avatars get out of first grade and into the next language. But HeyGen, I thought, HeyGen used 2 minutes of audio, right? Like it recorded the video and the audio, and it replicated my voice off of that. And I thought the HeyGen replication was probably better than what I had created on Resemble.
Wow.
So it's weird how it's moving so fast. Like I would say in the next year, but probably next week they'll update the technology.
Yeah, by the time we get this episode out, probably it's gonna be months ahead of us for sure. Okay, so I want to get your thoughts on this topic because, you know, as I was mentioning in the beginning, technology has been changing so fast, and it's been scary for some people to keep up with the pace of this change. And I know you have, you know, a podcast, you're the host of AI AF, which I'm going to let you say the actual name of that. But the idea is, you know, you focus on all this, you know, artificial conversation about real intelligence and what's happening. And I want to learn more about what the inspiration behind it has been, but also, so how do you encapsulate the essence of how crazy of a year last year has been when it comes to technology and the evolution and the societal reaction that it sparked?
Yeah, it's, you know, I had a team of writers working for me. I am a writer. I have seen so much fear and backlash in the writing community, and rightly so, you know. But the main narrative out there has been that the writing from ChatGPT isn't good, or that it's only good for a first draft, or that, you know, it's not. And I'm just going to say it: the reality is, especially when it comes to marketing content, most writing out there is not good now, and it's written by humans, right? Like there's maybe 5 to 10 really good writers, right? Like if you don't follow George Tannenbaum on LinkedIn, he's been writing a blog every day for 17 years, right?
Wow.
He's one of the best writers in the business. You can't replicate George Tannenbaum with ChatGPT. But I can replicate 80%, 90% of the other writers that are out there. Like, from my perspective, it really is good, right? Like, the end result is as good as you need it to be for certain applications. You know, there was a recent study that they did a bake-off between real writers and GPT, and their audience actually preferred. And they basically did like little product summaries, right? Like there were little marketing things. So, you know, this was academic research. And then it came back that the audience actually preferred the content written by ChatGPT.
Wow.
You know, so that's a realization that we all have to understand, right? Like that we all have to figure out what does that mean? I look at the feature film Seclusion, now available on DVD. And, you know, GPT.
Shameless plug.
This movie has been described. Check out the reviews on IMDb. It's great. This movie, I won't even say. Not brilliant, right? This is not Citizen Kane. You know, this is not Casablanca. I'm proud of it for what it was, but it's not the best writing in the world. So if I had GPT with this today, I probably would have been able to improve this script significantly.
Yeah.
I would have gotten to where this ended up faster. I would have been able to test more scenarios, to try more ideas, you know, because creativity and writing in particular is about collaboration. Mm-hmm. And with GPT, you can collaborate quite a bit. You can ask it its opinion. You can ask it for other ideas. You can keep pushing it for better ideas, for better thoughts. I've found several times, like as I've looked for come up with you know, a name for something or a name for a podcast or a name for a product or a campaign idea, it's pretty good. It's as good as most of the collaborators, you know, a lot of the human collaborators that I've worked with in the past. Now, it's no substitute, right? Because then you get real people in a room and you say, hey, here's what GPT did, and then that's when the real magic happens, is when you have other people collaborating. But GPT, you know, if you're that solo creator, gets you to a new point. So
absolutely,
AI as frick, AI
as fuck. Just kidding.
It's an experiment in generative AI and synthetic media. I do not record that podcast. It is entirely synthetic. My voice, I basically go in and I say, who are going to be my guests? And I go into GPT and I create a script. You know, and I'll edit that script, and we're, you know, we'll, I don't know what the percentage is now. Like the latest episode that we just did is probably 70% AI written, 30% Steve written, you know, 100% Steve edited. But then I go into Resemble and 11 Labs. I actually used both this time and tested the voice synthesizers. So I come up with characters. So this last episode, I interviewed Alan Turing, the famous computer scientist who has been dead for many years. So I was able to go into GPT and say, what would Alan Turing think about what's happened this year?
Right.
So it created a script for me. It helped me create a script into deep philosophical questions, right? Like I talked to Alan Turing about the nature of consciousness and the nature of being, you know.
Which is probably some topics that you're like, that's not how I would have a conversation with someone. It's like a bit above my pay grade to even entertain such thoughts.
Like to even get there. Now, in the past, right? Like if I wanted to do something similar, like hire an actor to play Alan Turing, I would have had to read a book, right? Or study.
Yeah, the research part gone into that, right?
Yeah. Instead, it took me like an hour to replicate Alan Turing. I don't know how accurate it is. That's not necessarily the point. But the point is, I was able to use that and create an interesting, what I hope is an interesting conversation that people may want to listen to. And so it's kind of a cue for the future of what, you know, how can you start to use these synthetic creations to do creative work?
I think the only stopper to this is like your own imagination. Like it blows my mind that is something that would come out of your mind. But then there's so many applications with that, right? It's like, wait, there's a new portal that's opening to all of us. If only we allowed ourselves to be curious and try.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely, and it's creative excuses, right? Like everybody, like what are people's excuses? Writer's block, done, forget about it. Like GPT takes it away. Money, time, like all of the excuses that people have to create something, whether it's video or art. I mean, the digital art world, oh my God, like some of the stuff that's coming out of Midjourney and these other tools.
Yeah.
You know, and you can debate whether it's art or what, you know, whether what is art. You know, what is it? If I worry that I've created the most brilliant piece of art in Midjourney, and then I just skip past it. It's like I don't recognize it, right? Because there's something to be said for the amount of time that people put into something, right? There's a value to my experience and my perspective and my time. There's a flavor to what I do artistically that's different from the flavor of what other people do.
Yeah,
so. How do we get that flavor into these new tools is really kind of the challenge. You know, now that the sky is the limit and anything can be created.
Human touch. So before we get into that, because I definitely want to dive into that the nitty gritty of that human touch, that, you know, it's so important to the technology that's evolving. We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. But we got to acknowledge our podcast sponsor and supporter, and we will be right back with Steve. Before we move any further, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our main sponsor, Trifan Events, which is a boutique event planning and production agency that will come alongside you, offering personalized event planning and technical support, strategic event design, production and technology management, and flawless execution for live, virtual, and hybrid events. The team at Trifan Events is passionate about planning and producing event experiences that get people involved with true moments of interaction, engagement, and co-creation, while offering white glove treatment throughout the entire planning process, enabling you to reach your event goals with the use of creativity, production tools, and event technology. To find out how Trifan Events can plan and produce your event become memorable, go to trifanevents.com. Welcome back, friends. If you're just joining us, we have Steve Mudd, CEO and founder of Talentless AI, a man whose career is as diverse as it is fascinating. So, Steve, we were talking about that human touch when it comes to Gen AI and the future of technology as we see it. So I'm curious from your perspective, with AI becoming such an integral part of the creative process, what are some ways in which we don't lose the human touch, and what are some ethical implications should we lose the human touch, particularly when it comes to content ownership?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to look at to really look at which realm of content that you're dealing with, right? Like in the world of marketing, in marketing content, right? Like I've been in the business of creating content for companies, and you always have to look at who is my audience and what do they need. And the reality is, I think where that type of content will go is into realms that are more creative and more fun, right? Because all of a sudden the bar is raised. People's expectations for content go up. You know, so you're going to see, like, there's a great company, Caspian Studios, who's been doing narrative podcasts, right? Like they'll hire voice actors and they'll tell a story over eight to 10 podcasts that actually gets, you know, becomes like a top ranked podcast, right? So that type of content reflects who you are as a company, who you are as a brand, right? Like it's like, hey, look, we're a brand that supports this. Like we believe in storytelling. The other side of it is, the traditional content channels, as they get flooded with all of this content and this higher level content, those channels are pushing people away, honestly, mm-hmm. right? Like Twitter, nobody's on Twitter, or I'm not even going to call it by its new name, right? Like Twitter's dead. You know, if depending on who your audience is, like LinkedIn is still, I think, viable, right? Like people are still on LinkedIn. At least I'm on LinkedIn, so I believe it's viable. People are going to more community oriented platforms, right? Like Ichi, like Club Sebo, like people are fleeing the main channels and going to smaller channels. And so content on those channels has to come in at a more personal level. Mm. You have to not come across, it has to not come across as marketing.
Right.
Which is an interesting nuance, right? But just has to say, like, hey, I'm here as a company, I'm here as a brand, I'm in this business, but I'm not here to sell you. So I think you'll see a push towards content that reflects people in a different way. And I guess we'll see how that evolves. I don't know if that was the most succinct answer, but.
I mean, in the marketing, like a B2B marketing point, you know, perspective, there's still going to be a bit of that selling happening, right? I mean, I hate that sometimes LinkedIn turns into a bit of that. Like you add someone new and the next thing you expect is to get pitch slapped, which I'm kind of tired of it, to be honest. And I've just started like not accepting requests from, you know, people that just come out of nowhere because I know exactly what the next step is. And it's like, it's keeping that step so I don't have to, you know, work on archiving, blocking, or whatever, you know? No. And the truth is, you're right. Like many times, you know, if you think about it, where we get our business from in most cases is through those smaller communities because people get to know you and then they don't buy what you sell. It's really they buy you and your authentic self and how you present yourself as a person more than just a brand. Right. There's something to be said about creating, you know, a good sense around your branding, right? There's something to be said about that. We talked about in previous episodes as well and how to do that, especially with the newer AI technology tools that can really help you focus the direction that you want to go and be known for. Sometimes I feel like I still struggle with that because I love a lot of things. I am into a lot of things and I am passionate to pursue many different avenues that bring the type of fulfillment, mental, physical, emotional, you know, all the things that make me who I am as a person. And that can confuse people that love to stay within boxes. Like creative people like us, I feel like we can be put in a box. Like try to put Steve Mudd in a box and see what happens. Probably he's gonna like bring link the box, redefine the box, just like throw away the box. Like, who came up with the box?
there's a box. Where's the woman? No, and you hit the nail on the head, right? Like everybody is playing from the exact same playbook. And if you look at what's happened over the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, however many you want to quantify it, John Miller, who was one of the founders of Marketo, has talked about this lately quite a bit, right? Like the playbook for marketing is wrong, right? Everybody's going after leads and it's the same process. And it's like, oh, do the in mail and do this. And then you know exactly what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
And we have underestimated the intelligence of each other. Mm. If I need leads, I know how to figure out how to go get leads. I don't need 10 people to email me and tell me they can give me 1 million leads, right? Like, right. I'm not going to respond to that. If I need coaching services, I'm going to call you. I'm going to call Liz. I'm going to call somebody who knows a coach, right? Like, there are the way in which I'm going to find the people to provide service for my business is,
yeah,
I'm going to maybe meet them in person, right? Like the events, right? Like, oh my gosh, it's so important now. Like I have, you know, for Talentless, the network that I have built here in Austin has been so incredibly supportive, and it has all been because of different types of events, meetups and larger events. You know, I've had access to venture capitalists. You know, I met my development team, who's actually based in India, through events. You know, I know how to do that. I did not respond to any marketing. Now, that's not to say that I won't, right? Because, you know, on the technology side, you know, I'm actively out there looking for new tools. I'm playing with all of the AI things, you know, so I do pay attention to that marketing. But even that, even amongst these new AI tools, the marketing sounds exactly the same. You know, there's very few that are actually differentiated. So you look at OpenAI, who I don't think has done any advertising, right? ChatGPT is not marketed. They just came out and they're like, here is,
right. And it just took everyone by like storm, right? It's like November 2022, right? And then it's like, what just happened?
What just happened? And you know, that made me stand up and take attention. Now, I look at all these SaaS companies, and I mean, there's a lot of companies out there, and actually, we're part of our job at Talentless. Like, we're helping these companies tell their story. We're building content. If anybody needs content, please call Talentless AI. You know,
they are actually talented.
we do have talent. We're working on ways to automate some. Like, everybody has to look alive on social, right? Like, you have to do something on social, just because that's the rule. So I've actually, if you go to the Talentless Instagram page, talentless.ai on Instagram, all of that content was created by AI. I didn't touch a bit of it. I didn't rewrite it. We set up the prompts to create images, to create we've automated that piece of it, right? So that part is there. Is that brilliant content? Is that content you're going to remember in 20 years? No, but we look alive, right? Like that's kind of what that objective is. But the audiences are smart enough to find what they need. And they push back when they know that you're trying to be pushy against them.
Yeah. So shifting gears a bit here, what are the significant trends that you see in event technology, Gen AI, that we should keep an eye open for in 2024? Because we're talking about this year. And I mean, if you asked me that question beginning of 2023 and ChatGPT just came out, but we were not ready for what the future was in January of 2020, right? So it's January of 2024, probably February by the time this episode comes out. But still, what should we keep an eye open for?
I think on the corporate side, adoption is still going to be slow. You know, like the bigger the company, the harder it is to change what gets done. You know, so I think the adoption of some of these tools, you know, for better or worse, won't quite be there. I think what you will see is an increased understanding of what goes on. You know, it's the question is, right? Because before Microsoft Word, right? What was there? I'm not that old.
There are some document thing that I remember using, like I was using for taking notes or something.
Yeah. Before that, I had a typewriter, right? So that wasn't that long ago that we were using typewriters. Now, the question is, did does Microsoft Word make you a good writer? Does PowerPoint make you a good presenter?
Right.
No. GPT has the ability actually to actually make you better at what you do. And what you're really going to see, Microsoft will be, layering ChatGPT and the models into Word and into PowerPoint and into Outlook. So you're going to have all those tools at your fingertips there. Google is already doing that with Bard and Gmail and documents, right? Like you can access Bard just naturally. It's just going to be part of what we do. So there are certain annoyances that we have to deal with every day, emails and, you know, just the usual, just the basic stuff that goes on that you have to do that is going to get a lot easier.
But even that, like I was one of the first adopters in the beginning when some of those Chrome extensions came out, and Kopose, I was one of my favorite ones. And I'm sure there's plenty of out there. But just to give an example of that, you know, sometimes you know how you wake up in the morning and you think you're going to have a great day, and then you open your inbox and you're like flooded with all these emails that now you like feel the need to get back to ASAP for some reason. And I used to have anxiety over it. Like I used to just feel that like anxiety rising. Like, oh my gosh, I'm like overwhelmed. You know, it's like, oh God, I have to respond in like properly. Now, if you ask me, I delegate a lot of that answering to a lot of the tools that I have. And the answer is actually really good. Sometimes even better than what I would come with, because on a day when I didn't have coffee, probably not very inspired, or maybe not even in the mood to be quite polite, if you ask me. So now I don't have to, like, it can professionally answer to that email. Yeah. And then sure, I can do a little bit of editing, make sure that it kind of sounds like me and it just didn't come up with like things that I'm not ready to promise. However, it has taken the lift off of having to do all of that every single day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and add to that, right? Like, think you're going to see, like, you know, we're the early adopters of these synthetic avatars, but part of our job is to sit and create videos like this, to create content like that. And, you know, I don't want to fix my hair. I don't want to, you know. Like,
talk about how long it takes for this present.
Right, right.
To show on camera. I was actually having a conversation with someone about that. I'm like, you know what? You're a guy. And it's easy for you to wake up, and from the moment you wake up to the moment you show on camera, there's literally probably one step. For me, it takes a lot of steps to get there. So if I could maybe skip some of the steps, and not that I always have to, you know, be put together to show up on camera, but honestly, if I am to present well, I'm not just going to wake up with my hair, like, you know, in all directions because I just woke up. Yeah. If you don't have any hair and you're a man, it's easy to show up on camera. Automatically.
So now you show up once, right? You look
exactly.
Once. Maybe you change your clothes and do it a couple times, right? So you
have to. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I was trying to make that argument.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's like, you know, and for executives, like, I don't care what company you are now, right? Like, that's part of the trend. Your face has to be out there. You have to have a face. You have to have face or faces associated with your brand. And I don't care if you're a SaaS company or whatever, right? Like, there has to be a person there. I've spent $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 on 5-minute talking head videos that take me 6 weeks. I could replicate those same results in 5 minutes, and then I can translate it into Spanish, and then I can translate it into Romanian.
Yeah.
So, you know, as people recognize the value of that, you know, I think people right now, there's I don't know about that AI content, but at some point people are going to be like, oh, I get it now. Right. Like it's easier. So I think you'll see more and more adoption already. I've noticed on LinkedIn a huge increase in the number of people. Like everybody knows instinctively, right? Like your post gets more reactions if you put a picture in there or an image, right? And I've seen a lot more people, you could tell they're using Midjourney or Ideogram or, you know, Runway, like any of these tools that they create images, to do that. It's such an easy, or GPT even, you just go to GPT. You can ask GPT, I need a LinkedIn post today. I don't know what to say. It just gives you the idea and it gives you the image that goes with it, right? So it's just more compelling.
many times, like in my case, like I would be, you know, get most of my ideas in the shower. Yes, secret sauce. And I have this beginning of an idea, but I want to, you know, evolve on it. So I literally, next step is go to ChatGPT. It's like, okay, I want to write a LinkedIn post about this, 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 this. Can you evolve on this? And I'm like, oh my gosh. How long would it have taken me to actually write that post, sit on it, re-edit it, rethink it? Oh, this doesn't sound right. Oh, mate, what would people think? Save time.
I have now discovered a new thing, and I don't know, we'll have to come up with a term for it. I'm a procrastinator, right? Like, I'm a creative person. I wait till the deadlines.
And that's where the inspiration comes, like this.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, it's exhausting. Right. Like, it's so I believe there is a new type of AI procrastination. And what has happened to me is I have work to do, right? Like, even now in the back of my head, I have some work I need to do for one of my clients. It's not going to take me long. But so I'm going to wait even longer to start it. Right. Like, I'm not going to wait till an hour before it's due. I'm going to wait till 10 minutes before it's due and still get it done. Right. Like, so that's maybe a bad habit, right? So
that could be a bad habit. That could get you in trouble for sure.
Yeah. You know, so it's adapting our personal processes. Like that's something too, like creatively, the creative process. And I highly recommend Tetragrammaton is a podcast from Rick Rubin. It's one of the best podcasts I've ever heard, but in his book, the Creative Way of Life, right? Like there are things in our life. I think because everything is so immediate now and so fast digitally, that it's actually going to be more beneficial for us to step away from our screens. Like, we don't have to spend as much time in front of our screens. So it's actually, I'm going to have a better time brainstorming if I'm sitting in my chair meditating or going for a walk. You know, I can go for more walks now. You know, a 3-day work week, not out of the question. Like, I can get everything I used to get done in 3 days. Absolutely. So the net effect of this acceleration of AI is that I think we can actually walk away from this digital world and enjoy our lives a little bit more, you know, connect Absolutely. With our friends and family. I don't know how brands deal with that. Like, how are brands going to deal with it when people walk away from their computers?
All I know is that all this 2020 era of virtual events and the time I've spent stuck to a screen have brought this on, which I've never actually had the need for before. And here I am, like, vision glasses for computer screens because I need it now, right? Right? But here's one awesome way to actually segue into my last point here, because you basically just took us right to where I wanted to get us anyway. And with all of the technology, as you mentioned, the advancements, the changes, even the productivity that comes with it, because I am one of the main proponents of wanting to do the things that I want to do and then allow time for the things that I love to do outside of work. And one of those things is, you know, bodybuilding. I would have not been able to embrace this sport and go competitively into it if it wasn't for the productivity that I gain with some of the tools that I'm using currently, because you still need time. Like, when I'm in the gym for an hour and a half every single day, that takes me away from my work. However, if I can get my work done, and not only get it done, but even be, you know, advancing in my work because I have all these tools, now I can spend my free time whatever the heck I want. And one way I would like to spend that would be working out. So that calls for this mental and physical fitness need for all of us to embrace more of, because I don't think we actually realized what a need that was until we, you know, went through the pandemic. And we realize how much is affecting us emotionally, mentally, also physically. And with all of that in mind, what are some ways in which you do maintain your well-being, especially in the demanding industry that we're in? You know, technology is a demanding industry. Events, it's demanding. Building a business is demanding. Life is demanding.
It's funny. I haven't been in the gym for like 9 years. So that is not my chosen path.
Yeah. Wellness doesn't have to be in the gym. Yeah. I think that's one important point I want to make, because wellness means a lot of things for many people, right? Just the fact that you go for a walk, you care about your wellness. It doesn't have to be working out heavily like I do that. That's what wellness means to me. Yeah. But I'm curious what it means to you.
I am right now, I've become one of these bird watchers. I'm a bird person.
What is that? Okay, so when you actually mentioned that in our introduction, I was like, Steve is kidding. What is that?
No, I go out. So I lived in Denver for a long time, and I don't feel they had a lot of birds. They might have. But down in Austin, down where I am, I live near a state park. And there are dozens and dozens and dozens of species of birds.
Wow.
And I now, every morning we go out and walk, or we try to, if the weather's good. And I'm looking for birds. You would talk about how I bring AI into that, right? I have an app, the Merlin app listens to birds, and it identifies what bird you're hearing on the app. So that's kind of a side note. But now there are some crested caracaras in my neighborhood, which is a bird of prey. They're also known as Mexican eagles. Every day I go out and I look for the caracaras because they're huge and they're beautiful. We go out and look for hawks. We go out and look for cranes and herons. And there's an electric tower of vultures. Mm-hmm. I love the vultures now. Like, they're ugly up close, but to watch them fly. So to me, that wellness is walking around. The bird watching, walking is great. Exercising is great. To me, the bird watching forces me to look up.
Right.
Right. And to pay
attention. So it adds that mental element to your walking, because now you're thinking, you're observing, you're basically, you know, curious about these birds, which before probably they were just kind of flying by and like, oh, here's a bird. Like me.
Yeah, they just fly by. And you've got, you know, the mockingbirds and it's like, and the cardinals and all that. So that's great.
That's actually fascinating. I love it.
It's really fun, and I got binoculars for Christmas. So now I'm like, you know, walking around like a creepy guy in the neighborhood with binoculars. But ultimately,
I think I saw a bird in that window.
Yeah, we could do a whole podcast on birds. But the other side of wellness for me, and the other thing I've been able to embrace in the last year, honestly. Corporate creativity, the corporate world is a drag, right? Like it can, it's just a lot because you have a lot of needs to serve.
Right.
And what has now opened up to me is that I believe we are all, people say, oh, I'm not creative. Yeah, you are. Right. Like I believe every person is creative. And my wellness depends on some freedom to create something new. And so that has been the most beautiful thing for me is just playing. Right? Like not everything has to be perfect. Not everything has to be, you know, Casablanca. But that playing and that creativity, whether it's online or somewhere else, like even just, you know, doing crafts or building gingerbread houses at Christmas time, like we are all creating. And if we step away from liking posts all the time, and take the time to just relax and think and breathe and be ourselves and let our minds iterate and create. That's where my happiness and wellness comes from.
I love that. I definitely love to have my quiet time in the morning. And I see its effect missing, especially on the days when I just, you know, start a day with like kind of like all of those to-do lists and it turns into this storm of activities. But at the end of the day, it's the days when I had my quiet time that are the most productive, because I actually allowed my mind to get into the flow without forcing it, you know. And a lot of people, you know, see me as a very outgoing person, but it is the quiet times, the silent times, the solo times on my own that recharge me to be that. I prize that. I realize I don't operate well for long under, you know, a very noisy environment with a lot of things. I need my quiet time. And when I'm, you know, in my office and I work for, you know, whatever, how many hours, it has to be quiet. And I love that because the world is already noisy.
Yeah.
You don't have to go far because you're going to get bombarded with all the noise. Finding what works for you is like, as you said, bird watching, if that's it, being able to do something that really recharges you and feeds that creative spirit that we all have in us. We just have to let it out in one way or another and allow it for it to come out by providing the proper ingredients, right? It's almost like my plants right now. I've been dying left and right because I allow my kids to take charge of it. And at the end of the day, it's not them not watering the plants. It's really the soil that needs to be repotted. And I haven't put no time into that. But that means, you know, that plant cannot grow if you don't give it the right ingredients, right? Mm-hmm. To bloom and just fed properly. Yep. The same goes with creativity. You got to feed it somehow. And that might be different from, you know, person to person, whatever works. But figuring that out, that's where the secret sauce is. Am I creative or not? Yes, you are. But are you feeding your creativity with the right ingredients that work mm-hmm. for you, right? So something to ponder upon as we come to a close here, Steve. I know you're onto a lot of things and you're constantly evolving with technology as technology is innovating. Where are the places that you'd like our audience to connect with you?
With me for sure. Talentless.ai is our website. Find me on LinkedIn. You know, send me a note, a personal note. Don't try to pitch me anything. We're in the business of building content. So you know, I know you have a lot of event people on here. If you need content for events, we're happy to work on some pilot projects and do some things. And find the AI as Fuck podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You know, check us out. But just reach out and say hello.
I'm curious, what's the next podcast episode going to be about?
I think I'm going to interview myself.
Younger self?
Yeah. I think I'm gonna upload the script of Seclusion.
Yeah.
Create a custom GPT and somehow have a conversation with Steve from that many years ago. I don't know how I can replicate my voice from that many years ago.
I'll just take a pitch or two down, like change the pitch. Teenager on steroids.
a teenager Steve. It's Steve with a mullet.
Oh my gosh, I feel like, Steve, we could go on and on this. Obviously, we barely scratched the surface. I think there's so much more to be talked about it, but there has to be a conclusion at some point. So with that, this is where we're going to conclude today's episode. A big thank you, Steve, for joining me, for entertaining this conversation. I feel like we definitely had the point of going in all directions, and I think we accomplished it.
I think we brought it home. We brought it from seclusion to conclusion.
Here we go.
In full circle. Thank you so much for inviting me on the show. It's been so much fun.
I really appreciate you. I loved our conversation. To all of you listening, if today's conversation has sparked your curiosity to learn more about Steve, please do connect with him and do check out his podcast. I know there's going to be a lot of new episodes that are going to be quite different than your regular episodes that you listen to. So check it out. Also, don't forget to share this podcast with your friends. And if you're new, do subscribe. We love subscribers. I'm actually running a listener survey currently. So if you heard that on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast, I would love to hear your feedback. We're trying to create new content for this year, but your voice matters. So we stay in tune with what you listen to and what you're curious to learn more about. And with that, this is your host, Anka Patantrifan, signing off for now. Catch you on the next episode. And until then, keep demystifying.
Thank you for listening to the Events Demystified podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to review it, rate it, and share it with other event professionals that could benefit from it. Connect with us on social at Events Demystified podcast. We would love to hear from you and what you're up to. If you'd like to learn more about 3Fan Event Services and find out if we're a good fit in supporting your event, can we help your event be successful with a 20-minute free consultation? Link in the episode's notes. Thanks for tuning in.